As a listener of our show, you know just how important it is to be vigilant when you're out for an evening run or walking to your car by yourself, especially if you're a woman. Women are easy targets for predators, but it doesn't have to be that way. You should be free to do you and feel safe, and I feel safer than ever with my Birdie personal safety alarm. It's made for women, by women, and you can get yours for 10% off today when you use code COUSINS15. By supporting our sponsor, you're supporting our show. So go to shesbirdie.com and use code COUSINS15 for 10% off today. Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. I love when you do that.
I try to do something different each time I start the recordings, and most of the time our listeners don't get to hear it except for that one time.
Except for the one time when I uploaded the wrong file and like 30 of you got to experience that. Lena was
sorry about that.
Why do birds suddenly appear? I was dropping my kids off at school, and I always turn it on when I leave to listen to it. And I was like, I was so confused. I was like, what?
Yeah, like, what am I listening to?
So I immediately like took it down and then had to repost it. But that was funny because it was the complete unedited garble. And it was just your audio file. That was the funny part, is it was just you. You were like, hey, Candace, how are you? I'm good. And it was like, you were talking to yourself. It was funny. But hey, guys, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
If you haven't yet checked out our merch, go on then. I've linked it in the show notes.
What are you waiting for?
And, okay, that website again is cousins-on-crime.myspreadshop.com. And, again, I've linked that in the show notes, so go take a look if you haven't already. Get our little baby faces on your bod, on your mug, on your tote bag.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for supporting our show.
Yes, thank you.
So let's take off our skibbies and dive in. I have a bit of an old-timey case today.
Oh, I like it.
We're taking it way back to the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
So
I like
it
those.
Was Saturday, July 9th. 1864.
Somebody has a birthday on July 9th.
That is my birthday, but not 1864. I mean,
no.
I do look like I was born in the 1800s, but a man named Thomas Briggs was the chief clerk of the bank Messrs. Robarts, Curtis, and Co., and he was also a father of four children. He left work about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and went straight over to visit his niece Caroline at her home in Peckham. Oh, and we're in England, by the way.
Okay.
He had dinner with her and her husband before he left around 8 p.m. and he told them he was headed straight home. So he got a bus to Fenchurch Street Station and boarded the 9:45 p.m. train bound for Hackney, which was where he lived. Any Taylor Swift fans out there? Anyway, she mentions Hackney in one of her songs. He settled into a seat in the first class cabin. He exchanged pleasantries with the railway servants, as they were called back in that day. I didn't just come up with a name. Servants. But he traveled the railway almost daily, so they knew him pretty well.
Oh, okay.
And shortly after taking his seat, the train departed the station. Now, the railway at that time was booming. It was growing. Passenger trains were fairly new still, but railway companies were expanding their routes. But at the time, they were pretty much picking routes that were the most commercial and like building tracks to accommodate those pathways, if you will.
Okay.
So there were only actually first and second class cabins on the railway in 1864. So while the train would pass through working class villages, there weren't any stops there. So nobody who was like working class was taking the train. So if you were traveling by train in that day, you could afford to do so. Okay. Just a little aside there. When the train arrived in Hackney about 10:11 p.m., two bank clerks boarded the first-class cabin, intending to find a seat, get settled for their train journey. But when one of the men placed his hand on the back of one of the seats, it was wet.
Oh, no.
And, like, at first, I'm sure he was like, ew. But yeah. It was wet with blood. So,
oh,
ew,
no.
And also, what the heck?
Yeah.
There was no one in the cabin. Just blood covering the cabin. Floors, walls, the seats. It was
what
like...
What in the world?
Yeah, there was nobody there. But there were some possessions left behind. There was a leather bag, a walking stick, and a hat. The men quickly alerted the nearby guard to report that they stumbled on what was no doubt a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
The guard boarded the cabin. He took a look around. He found it just as they described. But there was something else, too. There was a bloody handprint on one of the windows, like a smear.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the window was open, so...
What in the world?
Yeah. And something crazy that I still don't understand, and I dug to try and figure this out, but a lady that was in a cabin adjoining, like the train car next to it or behind it, got blood spatter on her dress.
What?
Now let me explain.
Please.
There were no corridors between these train cars at this time, in this particular time period. They didn't have corridors, so you literally got on a train, in a train car, and you were in there. You couldn't go between cars.
Okay.
Nowadays, you can start at the front if you want and walk all the way through the back of the train.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you couldn't do that back then. So, I don't know how she got blood on her dress. I don't know. I still can't figure that out. But apparently, there was a lady in the train car behind that got blood on her dress. Don't know how.
Yeah.
It was just reported in a few places. But she didn't report hearing or seeing anything. So that's what's even more weird to me is that...
Do you think maybe she didn't notice the blood splatter or spatter until, like, she realized something bad had happened? Like, maybe she just was like, oh, there's blood on my dress.
No, yeah, it was definitely after.
Okay.
So they're still trying to unravel this mystery. A couple hours later, Alfred Eakin, I think that's how you say it, he was a conductor driving an empty train back to another station to kind of, I guess, park it for the night. He was coming in the opposite direction of the train that Mr. Briggs was on, and he saw a battered body laying between the railroad tracks just short of Hackney Station. So just...
Okay.
Very close to where they ended up. When the man was recovered, it turned out to be the missing passenger from the first class cabin, where it was apparent that a crime had occurred. They were able to identify Thomas Briggs from the letters that he had in his coat pocket.
Oh.
He was unconscious, but he was still breathing, so they were really hopeful.
Wow.
Now, Thomas Briggs was taken to a nearby pub to get him out of the elements, you know, so that they could call a doctor to meet them there. But sadly, it was too late. Oh. His injuries were very severe, and he ended up dying the following day at home. The man was beaten so badly that his left ear was missing, and an autopsy revealed his death was caused by a skull fracture that had actually pressed his skull into his brain.
Oh, jeez.
He had defensive wounds on him, on his like lower arms, his knuckles, his hands. So they believed he fought the good fight,
sounds like it.
Really fought. But when police spoke with Mr. Briggs' family to get an idea of any, I don't know, potential enemies he may have had, there was none they could speak of. They were a little confused, though, when Thomas's items were shown to them, because they recognized the bag and the cane, but they did not recognize the hat.
Oh.
They were like, that's not his for sure. It was referred to what was called a beaver hat, and it was much cheaper than the silk top hat that Mr. Thomas Briggs wore.
Oh.
Which was not present in the cabin.
Oh.
So where was his hat, and whose hat was this? Perhaps it belonged to the killer.
Yeah.
They did tell police, however, that there were items missing from Thomas. One in particular was a pocket watch on a gold chain. They're like, yeah, he always carried that, and it's not here.
Oh.
So railway robberies and assaults were actually common during this time. Train cars, like I said, they didn't have connecting corridors. So you would be alone in your cabin until you arrived at your destination.
Mm-hmm.
These cabin loners, I mean, they were the most targeted. So if you were in there by yourself, someone might hop on, rob you, and then hop off the train.
Gotcha.
Because nobody could come to your aid. Like, no one.
Right.
And, like, here we see that nobody even heard this crime occur. And even though these crimes were occurring on the train, this was actually the very first murder to happen on the train.
Oh.
And British citizens were terrified. A book titled Mr. Briggs' Hat, A Sensational Account of Britain's First Railway Murder, compared the reaction of this murder as being similar to the terrorist attacks in New York and London. Like, people just did not feel safe anymore.
Wow.
That's how big of a deal it was.
That's sad.
The papers were buzzing too, and the headline of the murder finally replaced the front page news about the Civil War going on in America. That was, you know, that was the big news.
Okay.
That was always being reported on. One paper referred to this incident as, it said, if such a murder could happen in first class, then anyone could be slain in our pew at church.
Oh.
Stay tuned, Britain, because America will give you some more headlines about being killed in church pews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said it. In the days following the murder, police were not taking any potty breaks. Unlike our case from last week.
Yeah.
They were all over this. Headed by Detective Richard Tanner, they were working around the clock chasing down leads, and they even put up a 300-pound reward for any information leading to the capture of the assailant.
Mm.
At that time, it was almost as much as a couple of years' wages.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a huge reward. So it was all over the papers what had happened. The items taken were described. You know, as much information as they had was being put in the papers. I don't know how it worked back then. I know these days we keep some things close to our vests, and I'm sure they did back in that day too, but I think that without social media, without like this, the media that we have today,
right.
They were like, let's just put it all out there and see if anyone comes forward. So there was a jeweler in Cheapside, actually. His name was John Deeth. He said that a young foreign man brought a gold chain into him for appraisal and exchange. All the time the jeweler was inspecting the change for appraisal, the young man sort of stood kind of catty corner, like with his side towards the man, like kind of looking away as if to hide his face. And that really stuck with John. Like he was like, that's weird. Because people don't normally act like that. And also the value of the chain was given, and the gold chain that he exchanged it for was actually 5 shillings less. So he exchanged it for a lesser item. And according to a documentary, the First Railway Murder by True Story documentary channel, a 5 shilling gap between the two items would have raised eyebrows. So coupled with the man's behavior, plus the 5 shilling difference, you know, this incident really stuck with the jeweler.
Right.
Now, the exchange was made, and John Deeth put the new chain that the guy was taking into a box and gave it to him, and he was on his way. The family positively identified the chain that was exchanged as that belonging to Thomas Briggs. Someone else came forward too. A cab driver named Jonathan Matthews came forward to say that he read of that black beaver hat found at the crime scene, and he's like, oh, I know who that belongs to.
Okay.
He's a German immigrant named Franz Mueller. So Jonathan said that Franz had been formally engaged to his daughter. One report said that he was dating his sister.
What?
So the details are unclear as to how he knew that, how he knew him, but he knew him intimately enough because Franz really liked Jonathan's hat. Jonathan had a beaver hat. And Franz took a real liking to it. So Jonathan bought him one exactly like it.
Okay.
So they were close enough to where he bought him a hat.
Gotcha.
And so he could for sure say that that was Franz's hat. Like, he's like, I know that hat. He told police that Franz was working as a tailor. And he even had a photograph of Franz.
Oh, well.
So he gave that to the police. And he wasn't done spilling the beans at that point.
Interesting.
He said that Franz came to visit him a couple of days after the murder had happened. And he didn't realize at the time, but Franz had given his daughter, I assume a little girl, a box to play with while the two men were talking. So she's playing with this little box. Well, he didn't realize it at the time, but he definitely realized it now. That box was from John Deeth's jewelry store.
What?
So, when John Deeth was shown a picture of Franz Mueller, wouldn't you know that it was the same young foreign man that had exchanged gold chains with? And when trying to locate Franz, they questioned his landlady, and she said, yeah, I mean, I saw him the Monday following the crime, and he, you know, didn't say much, but I did notice that he had this shiny new gold chain that looked a lot like the victim's chain that was described in the papers. And for all this information given, Mr. Matthews collected that reward money, because that was the link that gave Investigator Tanner his big break in this case. And it was at that time, with all the evidence taken together, may have been circumstantial.
Wow.
Okay, they didn't have fingerprints, blood evidence, none of that. a warrant was signed for Franz Mueller's arrest. But Detective Tanner's heart would sink when he learned the reason why Franz went to Jonathan's home that night. He went there to say goodbye because he was leaving for America.
Okay.
So he was on the run.
Uh-huh.
And he tracked Franz's trail. Franz's, I mean, that's makes me feel weird saying that. Franz's, his trail, all the way to the London docks, where they learned that Franz had left on the Victoria, a sailing ship bound for New York.
Ooh, he's getting away. Yep.
And in those days, you could actually get a cheap ticket on a passenger ship like that because it was really close quarters. It was cramped. It was not comfortable. Mm-hmm. People were making their own food. And it often took weeks to make the journey.
Ugh.
It was no cruise ship.
yeah.
But according to Franz's friends, he had been saying for a while that he was going to go to America and get a job. And he was talking about all this money that he was going to make. And so people, it didn't raise any alarm bells when he left. They weren't mm-hmm. like, oh, he just up and went to America, because he had been saying for a while, even before the crime was committed, that he was going to America.
Gotcha.
So on July 20th, Detective Tanner took a train to London, and then he hopped on a steamer headed to New York so that he would arrive before Franz. Steamers were much okay. faster than the passenger ships.
Good thinking.
Yes. And he actually arrived in New York 3 weeks ahead of Franz.
What? Wow.
Yes. So even though Franz had left before and he was already on his way, he beat him there. and that was a big deal, because if Franz would have arrived first, he could have easily disappeared. I mean,
oh, yeah.
America is so much bigger than Britain. Yeah. he would have been able to perhaps change his name and maybe even join the military, because the Civil War was going on at the time. They needed men to fight, and gotcha. He could have enrolled, you know, he could have
oh, yeah.
done anything. Once in New York, Detective Tanner and his entourage needed to be careful, because an Englishman in America while the Civil War was going on was... Britain had declared neutrality when it came to the Civil War. President Lincoln had written to Queen Victoria ordering that Britain block southern ports, and she was like, I'll do no such thing, darling. So the northern states were like, how dare you, you know? And that's why Detective Tanner's presence in New York wasn't really appreciated. Especially when he rolled up in there saying, yeah, I'm waiting for a guy to dock so that I can arrest him and take him back. And they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not, we string people up here. That's not how we do it.
Oh, you know? Man.
Well, they string people up in Britain too, so. Finally, the passenger ship that held Franz Mueller arrived in the port. And when Franz walked off the vessel, he was promptly confronted by Detective Tanner and a bunch of riled up Americans, because Detective Tanner had been there for a few weeks and they knew what was going on. And so people were shouting, welcome to America, murderer.
What?
Mueller the murderer. So people were mad.
Oh, I wish I was a fly on the wall, like, when he, like, to see his face.
Oh, no. Well, there was no extradition treaty between Britain and New York State back then. So there was this whole controversy, like I said, about what would happen once Franz got to New York. Who would be doing the arresting? Who would be questioning him? Who right. would be detaining him? And ultimately, they agreed that the U.S. Marshal would arrest Franz. So that's what happened. And they waited and waited for the Victoria to arrive. And day by day, they thought, oh no, maybe his ship has arrived. And because due to the rough seas, it took the Victoria nearly 6 weeks.
Wow.
From the time it left England to arrive in New York. 6 weeks.
How miserable.
So, like I said, he had arrived 3 weeks ahead of him. So each day that went by, he was like, oh, man.
Yeah, is today the day?
I know. So to no one's surprise, Franz had Thomas Briggs's watch and hat. But to everyone's surprise, however, he was pretty chill when he was taken into custody. He was just like, okay. Franz seemed surprised to be arrested, but he didn't say much at the time. He was just, The captain of the ship even remarked how relaxed he was on the journey to America. He said he read Dickens, he gambled, he even lost a bet for how much sausage he could eat. I don't know the details on that bet, but it sounds terrible. And the captain said he would have never thought that this guy was like on the run for murder, because Franz didn't act like he was
just this worried about anything. Guy.
And he was probably like, psh, I got away with it. I'm on a, you know, I'm going to step into New York and blend in.
Yeah, ain't no thing.
Detective Tanner couldn't just take Franz back to Britain because, like I said, he was arrested by New York State. So they had to have a hearing and hear all the evidence. Like, basically, they had to have two trials. So this hearing was to prove to America this guy needs to come back to England to stand trial for murder. So they had to present all the evidence that they did have. Like Britain, New York had a huge immigrant population, and there was a lot of sympathy for Franz Mueller.
Oh.
He was an immigrant. And so they had a task ahead of them because they had this kind of culture. It was one of their own, almost. Right. It was an immigrant. Yeah. They were trying to take this guy back. He was no doubt going to be punished. So they needed to make for sure he was guilty of what he was being accused of.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for the detective, he had all the evidence that we've talked about. And I didn't tell you who was in his entourage.
Okay.
He brought the jeweler and the cab driver with him.
So smart.
So he had two witnesses that basically backed up the circumstantial evidence that he had. The box, the chain, all this, the hat. And so American authorities were like, yeah, he'd be guilty. So September 3rd, 1864, Franz was put his booty back on a ship going back to London. And the British public were waiting for him and they were pissed.
Ooh.
They had formed a mob. They wanted to get a look at this person, finally, that had terrorized their community for months at this point. So to Old Bailey, Franz went to stand trial for the murder of Thomas Briggs. Now, at trial, like I said, they didn't have much in the way of hard evidence. There was no blood evidence, no fingerprints, nothing like that. Franz stayed pretty quiet, even still during his trial, and maintained his innocence the whole way through. He said, I was at a brothel the night of the murder.
I wasn't
on a train. Couldn't have been me. I was having the time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere else. The murder weapon was never found, but when Franz was arrested, he had Thomas Briggs' watch on his person. He also had his hat.
Yeah.
And like I said, more would be learned about Franz's movements immediately following the murder. The night of the murder, Franz Mueller went home to the home of his friends, Mr. and Mrs. Repsch. I think that's how it's pronounced, on Dewey Street, around 7 o'clock. Now, Elizabeth Repsch said she often took Franz's hat when he would come in the door, and she took his hat that night, and she kind of looked at it strange, like she had never seen a hat lined that way before.
Oh.
You see, it was a top hat that was modified. It had been cut down and sewn back together neatly so that it was shorter than a top hat.
Oh.
Yes. So Mr. and Mrs. Repsch had actually gone out that night. Franz stayed at their home with a guy named Hoffa. Don't know much about this guy, but basically Hoffa saw the items, the watch, the chain, and he also corroborated that information. Now, Franz was not seen until the Monday after the murders. I don't know what he was doing during that time.
Laying low.
Yeah, laying low, cleaning his nails of all the blood all over him. But no one can account for where Franz was during the time he says he was at the brothel. Nobody can say he was there. He wasn't there with anyone. And I'm assuming they went to said brothel and questioned people, and no one could place him there. Now, Franz Mueller was found guilty of the crime and sentenced to hang. November 14th of that same year, 1864, 4 months after the murder, he was taken to the gallows at Newgate and led up the wood scaffold.
Wow.
A drunken, cheering crowd of over 40,000 people.
I read 40,000?
One place that said 50,000, but they were lining the streets. I mean, ear to ear, cheek to cheek. They just wanted to see this. They were excited. He was heard muttering the words, "Ich habe es getan," which is German for, "I did it," just before he was dropped.
And oh, my goodness.
So all that time, he maintained his innocence, and he finally admitted right before he swung.
Oh, man.
And even though it seems like that's the end and, like, justice was served, the British public were left wanting a little bit because, yeah, we got the guy, but they didn't feel like they got the full story during the investigation and the trial. They still weren't sure if this was, like, a planned attack or what.
Like, choose him?
Yeah, like, were they at risk for a random attack like this? Kate Colquhoun, this historian that wrote that book that I mentioned earlier, says that she believes that it was likely a robbery gone wrong, and that Franz didn't realize that he had killed Thomas Briggs. I mean, I'm not a physicist by any means, but if I threw someone from a train, I would assume that they're dead. That's just me, okay?
Yeah.
But I will say that I happen to agree a little bit with the Brits on this one, because why did Franz Mueller kill Thomas Briggs?
Yeah.
He had no criminal history to speak of, like we find out. And his friends and acquaintances remembered him as being, like, very ambitious, a bit grandiose at times, but he was always trying to be, like, more fashionable, modify his clothing so that he looked better, more on trend, and even, like, set new trends.
Oh, okay.
He was polite, respectful, so it's just wild that he would have done something like this. He had never been in trouble for robbery before. And so he just decides to rob someone, and it goes wrong, and then he throws the guy from a train. It just seems like a huge leap.
It does. I mean, but if Thomas Briggs had the look that Franz wanted, and he's like, maybe, oh, I like that, I like your hat, I'm going to take it. And, I mean, that's motive enough, I think, but to not have any, like, he already plans to leave for America. So maybe he's thinking, I'll just murder this guy and then get the heck out of here. You're maybe, right. It is a far...
Maybe it was something even more simple that he thought, you know, that guy looks rich because he was well off. Thomas Briggs mm-hmm. was wealthy. Maybe he thought, I'll get just enough mm-hmm. for my ticket to America.
Right.
Because I think back in that day, it was like £4 or something crazy to get on the passenger ship to get to America. So maybe he thought, if I just take that guy's hat or take his gold watch or something, I'll get enough money to go. And then Thomas Briggs beat the crap out of him, you know, like, because he had all these knuckle wounds. And so maybe he just fought and yeah. Franz felt like he had to defend himself then,
yes, like, or else he was going to be.
Yeah. And he thought, oh, this is not going the simple way that my simple mind thought it might go.
Right.
It's just wild. I mean, to go from not to 60, you know?
Right.
But shortly after Franz's execution, public hangings were actually banned, which I found interesting. It was deemed too gruesome to just be right out in the open like that, in the streets, you know?
You see movies of all these people, like, they're like, hang him. And I'm like, I don't think I would be one of those people standing there watching someone die like that.
Yeah, because sometimes their necks wouldn't break like they were supposed to when they were being dropped, and they would dangle there for minutes until they strangled themselves.
I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
It is gruesome. So just imagine you're walking down the high street to go buy a pair of shoes and there's a hanging in the square. Mm-mm. I mean, that is.
And kids, for the kids to see.
Exactly. Yeah. And the crowds got too rowdy. Like, that crowd for him was very rowdy. I mean, people were very angry. So they started conducting the hangings behind the walls of the prison. Another change that was implemented was that many railway companies installed like a little safety window in the cars on the adjoining sides, so you could see through into the next car. And they actually called these windows Mueller's lights. But the holes didn't really do anything, and some passengers complained that it inhibited their privacy, so they were eventually sealed up.
I mean, but at least put a shade or something in there so that
if you wanted privacy. Down, see, Elena, you should have been in charge of this.
I would have been.
But a couple years later, in 1868, Section 22 of the Regulation of Railways Act required a means of communication between the train cars, so they developed a communication cord that passed through the cars. And it's good that they implemented the safety measure. And of course, as time went on, the railways got safer.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have toilets on the railways. We have full 4-course meals on the railways. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, you can sleep on the train. And so we've come a long way. And much of history remembers Franz Mueller, the murderer, more so than the victim in this case. And we find this in a lot of cases, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's sensational. The porthole windows being named Mueller's lights, and the modification that Franz made to Thomas Briggs' hat actually became fashionable for a while.
What?
Yes, it was like a trend. And actually, if you think about a shortened top hat, you could probably still find some of those these days. You know, that seems very trendy. But what we should remember is that a very successful, respectful man, a father, was beaten and thrown from a moving train.
Mm-hmm.
For what? You know, and he suffered greatly.
Yeah.
That pub that he was taken to was called top of the morning, which I love. Mm-hmm. And while it's not there anymore, in its place are luxury apartments, and there is a plaque on the building that reads 129 Cadogan Terrace, a memorial to Thomas Briggs, Esquire of Clapton, who on Saturday, 9th of July, 1864, was viciously assaulted near here on a London railway train. Carried near to death into this public house, he died at home later the same day. He was the first person to be murdered on the railway train.
Wow, I love that.
So, a little memorial to him. And I like that, because that building that where the pub was at, it actually changed to a different pub over the years, and then it was knocked down, and luxury apartments were built in its place, but they still kept the plaque. So I thought that was great, and a great place to end the story. So rest in peace, Thomas. Well, I hope he haunts
those apartments. You should go visit there next time you...
I know. Yes, I should.
Yeah. All right, guys. This was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you next
time.
Bye,
y'all.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.